This is Alan Nathan of Radio America sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily. With all the debate surrounding the now stalled health care reform and each side saying the other is using politics over policy, it's easy to lose track of where the real differences actually exist. To assist us in this endeavor, today we have Dr. J. James Rohack, president of the American Medical Association. Dr. Rohack, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here with you.
Now, the Democrats supporting the current health care bills in dispute point to the AMA's support of them as their legitimacy. On July 1st, you had this exchange on CNN.
Let me ask you if you were for a government-sponsored health insurance option. This is what President Obama wants to do. Very recently, the AMA has said in print, very clearly, we don't think this is the best way to handle this situation. But then you just told Tony that you're for it.
There already exists a system called the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program. Congress has it. Federal employees have it. Why not allow individuals to purchase into that system?
Well, physicians are working day and night to try and provide patients with high-quality care within the confines of a system that works for some, but for many doesn't work at all. And so when we engaged in the legislative process way back at the beginning of this year, we knew that this was going to be an ongoing dialogue of what we could do as America's physicians to try and make sure that the things we do good in America are strengthened and the things we don't do so well are eliminated.
There seems to be this assumption that if one doesn't support one of these existing bills, then by default one is in support of the status quo.
Well, I think, Alan, you characterized it very well, that just like if someone doesn't support a bill, you're alleging that the status quo is acceptable. In like manner, if one supports a bill, it's the assumption that further work doesn't have to be done. We recognize that if we are going to have affordable health insurance coverage for all Americans, we have to get rid of the unnecessary cost in American health care. And defensive medicine is one of the big cost drivers that we believe, as physicians on the front line, that extra tests are being done just to be protected in case something happens down the road. We think, and we have signaled both to the White House as well as Congress, that if you allow the medical profession to do what we do, which is best for patients based on evidence-based guidelines, and give us the protections that we need so we don't have to order the unnecessary tests to protect us in a courtroom, that we can start driving out the 20% of healthcare costs that are attributed to defensive medicine.
I'm wondering, do you ever once in a while consider the possibility that perhaps you folks are underusing the very formidable leverage you really have? Because, again, originally, last month, you folks were against the healthcare bills that were under discussion. And then the change of heart happened after you were able to secure Medicare reimbursements against something originally marginalized in the initial bills as a cost-cutting counterweight to their otherwise ballooning price tags. It looks to a lot of folks that once you guys got what you wanted, that was all you needed. You really wanted the Medicare reimbursements, and once you got that, you felt comfortable in supporting a bill that otherwise still accommodated a whole host of other evils that you have spoken out against, these past 20 years.
Alan, what we have been focusing on is a bill that would make sure that patients had choice and had access to physicians, so that in the original proposals, they were going to force patients in a way that physicians would be very problematic for them to be able to keep their office open or not. So we're looking at the bill as a whole. It completely changed in some areas that we think are important for patients. The public plan option, for example, the original proposals forced a physician to accept the public plan as well as Medicare beneficiaries, didn't allow the choice to participate or not. In this new proposal, the physician and the patient have the opportunity to decide in a health insurance exchange whether or not they'll participate in the public plan.
There is an end date to how long they can have folks added to the rolls of their private health care. In other words, we constantly hear from both the president and congressional leaders supporting these bills that, look, don't worry, if you like your current health care plan and you want to keep it, you can. However, it seems a little intellectually disingenuous to assert such a thing when you have an end date as to how long people can be added to the rolls of those same private health care plans. Doesn't that little caveat disturb you as well?
Well, it certainly highlights one
because
of the
it then makes it look as if, you know what, we're giving you a choice, but in reality, there is no choice, and you're going to all wind up on the public option anyway.
Well, if we don't do anything right now, a few years ago, 60% of employers provided health insurance benefits for their workers. Now it's down to 54%, and it continues to go in a negative glide path. So we're going to have to do something to address the unnecessary cost to make this a viable plan. Certainly the American Medical Association, when we decided with our House of Delegates to support changes in health reform, four basic principles: universal access for everyone, but access in a pluralistic system, that is a private and a public system, and freedom of choice for patients and freedom of practice for physicians.
Well, no, you say that. I'm glad you say that. Freedom. I want to just stop you right there. Now, I promise I'll move on. You mentioned freedom of choice for patients, and it sounds very good. But if you essentially are telling those people to whom you're offering a continuation of their free choice that it's only free choice up to a certain date, at which point those private care accommodators no longer can add to their roles, isn't that by default telling people eventually you will have no choice? Because if you're not allowed to continue adding people to the roles of the private care, then you're not going to have the required funds necessary to sustain their coverage, and therefore that will drive them to the public option, thereby removing the real choice supposedly given to them right now.
Our interpretation of the bill is that the allegation that somehow private insurance is going to go away with the way the bill is constructed, that's not how we interpret the bill, and certainly if it did not allow the pluralism that we believe is important of a private sector and a public sector, that would be problematic. However, Alan, I do need to emphasize the AMA has been very concerned about the market consolidation of the private industry to the point that there is no choice for patients. When you have a market dominant private insurer that can dictate rates and dictate premiums to the patients and not allow choice for them, that's not a very good alternative either, especially when the profits that are being pulled from that system are not going back to taking care of patients or taking care of better medical cost payments. So we believe that there's some things in the American system that are very good, great technology, being able to cure diseases that normally would kill people. However, we also do some things that aren't so good, and those are the things we want to fix. Defensive medicine, got to fix that, got to fix the administrative simplification. We got to have a pluralistic system so that there's not a government subsidization of a public plan that would unlevel a playing field and make it very problematic for private plans to compete.
So while we have the best healthcare science, we most assuredly do not have the best healthcare system.
We do not even have a system yet, and we hope that the stimulus package with its incentives to allow for health information technology plus the ability to have interchanging information systems so that we can share information back and forth, we'll also be able to have some efficiencies and better care. So when the patient, you as a patient, I as a patient, go to see the physician, they're able to access the information that's needed at the time that you're seeing them, rather than our current system, which isn't really very efficient with paper-based records that are difficult to be in real time when they're needed.
You had talked about the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program. Congress has it. Federal employees have it. All seem to love it. I once worked for the federal government. I enjoyed it when I had it. Why can't that be the option, perhaps accompanied by the obligation of the young to join so as to ensure enough are in the pool to support the coverage, but do so with the option to choose their provider as one might car insurance? What's your sense of that?
Well, when we've been bringing up that option, which we think makes a lot of sense, it exists. It's not going to require billions of dollars to do a startup as the public plan option might have to. It's also available in 50 states, and it provides the choice. Some of the naysayers have said, well, that's a very rich plan. It pays, the government pays about 83% of the premium. The benefits are very rich. But our response to that is, well, we didn't say you have to give everybody the Cadillac. What you do is you give them options. You give them then the basic medical benefit that we've been talking about of saying covers prevention, covers the things that are important, but it may not cover all the things that medical science can bring, because there still has to be the recognition in an American capitalistic system that there should be some rewards for those that work hard, but yet having a safety net where people go to the emergency room and cost shift for diseases that could be prevented isn't very effective as far as keeping premiums down either.
So the federal employee health benefit program could still work as a marvelous structure because it already does exist, while still affording the government the option of perhaps lowering the caliber of coverage that could be purchased. But at least we'd have it infrastructurally in place, yes?
Well, not only infrastructure, but again, we've also, as the American Medical Association, have talked about giving people advanceable tax credits inversely related to their income to purchase and own their own health insurance. So again, the model is the government can give those tax credits to the individual to help purchase and own their own policy, and they would own it. It would not be job locked. They would also then have the basic benefit and the incentives for prevention, which are going to be important to prevent the disease burden down the road. So we believe, and the reason that we are engaged in this process and the AMA endorsed the bill was to move the legislative process forward. We think there's some better ways to accomplish that. We felt that we would not be able to articulate that if we were outside the room. We want to be at the table to be able to say, hey, you guys are stuck. We've got a solution to get yourself out of this box. Let's deal with defensive medicine costs. Let's look at the federal employee health benefit program as the model to get those that don't have choice to be able to get into a system that exists. And again, ultimate goal, affordable health insurance coverage for everyone.
So while the government's reversal on Medicare reimbursement may have been enough to get you on board, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're fully satisfied with this. There's still a lot of exceptions and changes you would like to see take place.
We want to say that we are engaged in this process to make sure patients have access to care, and incentives are aligned in such a way that people are making good choices and everyone is being covered in a way that's affordable.
Once again, that was the president of the American Medical Association, Dr. J. James Rohack. I'm Alan Nathan of Radio America, sitting in for Greg Corumbus and reporting for WorldNet Daily.